The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You look great. What have you been doing?
I found Zelthy. If you qualify, their providers can prescribe the same active ingredients in Ozempic and other expensive GLP-1s for 80 to 90% less without insurance. All of mine shipped right to your door.
Get started with Zelthy today for just $39. Call #250 and say keyword care. That's care to #250.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. I'm Michael Steele. It is always a pleasure to have you in the house. Not too much going on. It's been kind of quiet out there. You know, someone said the president's getting impeached. I went, what? They're impeaching Biden already? And they're like, no, the other guy. But it's serious time for the country. Obviously, we're going through a lot still on the heels of January 6th. And the horror of that day is now being replayed for the country in great detail by the House prosecutors. And so we'll see how this turns out. I think we know it's unfortunate, but we'll see. Meanwhile, as all that is happening, a noted author has snuck in a book that exposes a whole other tale on the Trump saga. There's none other than Craig Unger, who has written a book that has stirred quite a few pots, not just here in the U.S., but globally. The book, American Kompromat, How the KGB Cultivated Donald Trump and Related Tales of Sex, Greed, Power, and Treachery, is out, and it is quite a tale, which we'll get into. Mr. Unger, for 15 years, was a contributing editor for Vanity Fair, where he covered national security, the Middle East, and other political issues. He's a frequent analyst on my network, MSNBC. We've not had a chance to actually be on together, I don't think.
That's correct.
I mean, because you're doing that highbrow stuff. I'm lowbrow politics. you're doing the highbrow stuff. But he was a longtime staffer at New York Magazine, has served as editor-in-chief of Boston Magazine, and has contributed to Esquire, The New Yorker, and many other publications. He also appears frequently, as I said, not just on MSNBC, but CNN and other broadcast outlets. He has written about the Trump-Russia scandal for The New Republic, Vanity Fair, and The Washington Post. He's a graduate of Harvard University. We'll forgive you. And lives in Brooklyn, New York. Hey, Craig, welcome to the podcast, man. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm just straight up put out there, because we're going to hit it a number of times in the podcast. Folks, this is the other side of the tale, which you can actually almost look at as an origin story for what we have lived through and have experienced as the Trump presidency. At the very beginnings of the 2015 campaign, there were some inklings, rumblings that there's something else going on here with Russia, the intense desire that Trump had to build Trump Moscow hotel, casino, et cetera. And as you put together this book, it's interesting that in addition to how you source this with Yuri Svets, who's a former KGB colonel, you also had former CIA director Michael Morell has called Trump an unwilling agent of the Russians. Former national security director James Clapper has described him, quote, in effect, an intelligence asset. And former CIA director John Brennan has also said that Trump, quote, is wholly in the pocket of Putin, and end quote. What the hell is going on with Donald Trump and the Russians?
Well, exactly. I mean, that is, I think, one of the key questions, and no one really did the deep dive. And frankly, James Comey tried to do it. He was doing a counterintelligence investigation when he was fired by Trump and he was at the FBI. Robert Mueller was supposed to do a counterintelligence investigation. And if you look at the original papers mandating him as authorizing him as special counsel, it says it's a counterintelligence investigation, but he didn't do it. And it became a criminal investigation, which is a very, very different animal. They seek crimes to prosecute. A counterintelligence investigation tries to uncover what intelligence operation was going on. And that's what I tried to do. So I went back to the beginning and I realized who would know better about recruiting Donald Trump as an asset than the KGB. So
I went to the KGB.
In your neighborhood, right around D.C., there are a lot of former KGB agents.
Oh, so yes, there
you
are.
You better be careful.
So how was that? Okay, so you actually, before we really get the deep dive in, let's just go back sort of top line. When you talk about that you had the Mueller investigation, sort of looking at this initially as a counterintelligence, what happened there? What was the breakdown? Because at the end of the day, there was no criminal prosecution prosecuted. You know what I'm saying? It just didn't turn out that way. I think to your point, or at least the inference of your point, is that because of that divergent into the prosecutorial sort of criminal side, you lost the real elements that would have stood up, would have been hard to defeat in an impeachment trial.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, I'm old enough, I grew up watching the Manchurian Candidate in this conspiratorial paranoia. So it was kind of hard to believe that something like this had actually happened. But if you look at it step by step, part of the genius of intelligence operations is that they operate within the confines of the law as much as possible.
Right.
So the very first door opening in which the KGB reached out to Trump was perfectly legal. He, in 1980, he had his first great success as a real estate developer when he developed what is now the Grand Hyatt Hotel right near Grand Central Station. And like any hotel, it needed television sets. But where did he get them from? But from an electronic store that was run by former Soviet emigres. And it turned out, as I learned, according to Yuri Svets, that was really a front for the KGB. So when he just thought he may have just thought he was getting a good deal on some cheap TV.
Yeah, well, there was that.
But he was opening the door, and that's when he was in KGB files, and they start to decide whether or not someone like Trump, who is he had no political standing whatsoever back in 1980.
Right, sure.
He was just an influential businessman, and they decide, is it worth trying to cultivate him? And the answer is absolutely.
Oh my gosh. All right. So folks, you got to get your popcorn because this is about to get real interesting. So, all right, 1980, I need some TVs, Trump goes to a Russian emigre, goes to his shop, which is actually a front for the KGB.
And if you know New York, it's near the Flatiron Building.
Right. I know the
Fifth Avenue. Yes.
Oh my gosh. So you can't make this stuff up. So the reality TV sequence begins. Tell us about Yuri Svets, former KGB colonel, really the primary source for a lot of this in your book,
which is just
one page after the other of just amazing information. What walk us through that as a setup to what comes afterwards.
Right. Well, Yuri, there are two things you should know about him. One is during this time, he was actually a major in the KGB at Washington Station, which was working mostly out of the Soviet embassy then. This was still the height of the Cold War, the mid and early 80s.
Right.
And while he's doing that, his colleagues in the New York station are recruiting Trump. So he was in a position both to have firsthand knowledge and also have the kind of knowledge you have when you know the protocols of an institution you're working with, and you know the people personally.
Right.
He also, since then, he's been a very vocal critic of Vladimir Putin. And if you follow the story of Alexander Litvinenko, mm-hmm. who was poisoned by Putin.
Poisoned by Putin, right.
He and Yuri were working together, and Yuri dug up some of that explosive information that was so devastating to Vladimir Putin that Putin had Litvinenko assassinated. Yuri was a key witness in the UK inquest into Litvinenko's death. And he fingered, I think he's done some stuff that's courageous because he fingered the assassin on the record. And then he had moved, he also testified before Congress in 99.
I would say he moved very quickly.
He did. Here he's a little safer than even the UK.
He found an undisclosed location, not nearby, right?
Right.
So go ahead.
No, well, so he testified before the United States Congress in 1999, saying that all sorts of Russian dirty money was being laundered in the United States. And if any of us had paid attention to him then, we might not have gone through the last 4 years with Donald Trump.
So he's an old world, he's a Cold War, old world KGB guy, right?
Yes, but he resigned. He became very disillusioned and resigned.
So that's what I asked you. So that broke down for him.
Yeah.
All right. So Trump actually gets fingered by the KGB earlier than that, earlier than 1980, right? It's actually when he married his wife.
Right. Exactly. His first wife, I mean, it's interesting, all three wives are models, but Ivana was Eastern Bloc, as by the way, Melania is as well.
Right.
But in Czechoslovakia, the Secret Service, known as the STB, began keeping an eye on his in-laws, and they happen to be located in a town called Zlin, I believe, which is sort of the Czech equivalent of Langley. In other words, it's where their secret services are. So when his father-in-law died, there were in fact Czech agents at the funeral, and they did report to Moscow as well. They shared information with the KGB. And that's a whole nother train. It's unclear. I talked to Yuri Schwitz about it. He wasn't sure what the KGB did with that information. That is, he didn't think Trump's father-in-law would have been very knowledgeable, or Trump at this point certainly did not have access to any classified information.
So it was just an East European model on its face.
I think there are strands out there to follow, but I don't have all the answers yet.
Interesting. So now we're into it. He marries Ivana, the KGB, and that's 1977. So the KGB's got their antenna up on him. He makes that connection wittingly or unwittingly through the purchase of the TVs for his first big hotel effort. Is there in your research and in your conversations Mr. Schwitz, is there a point where Trump knows he is, and this gets into the witting or unwitting aspects of being
right.
So is he wittingly participating or unwittingly participating at that point? Because we'll get into subsequently later, but in this area, we're right now in the early 1980s, mid 1980s. Is he oblivious to that or not?
Well, he may well be oblivious. I can't get into his mind, of course.
And obviously,
there's no evidence that he is witting. But I mean, a lot of what's going on here is in 1983, Trump Tower is built and the Russians begin a charm offensive. And they say how wonderful it would be to have a Trump Tower in Moscow. And if you remember the Cold War at that point, we were not friendly.
Right.
And they were still very, very much communists. And the idea that the communists want a glitzy and gaudy monument to capitalism on Red Square.
Near made no sense.
That doesn't wash. And the only one who could believe that is someone like Donald Trump.
And he bought it.
Exactly.
Amazing. I mean, dude, I mean, seriously. Yeah, and then he winds up president. Okay, so how now, in the full scope of your conversations and sourcing, especially with Yuri, how has Donald Trump been an asset to the Russians?
He has given so much to them. I think it's unbelievable. I mean, and a lot of it comes out as early as 1987. And this was, to me, sort of one of the reasons I found Yuri such a valuable source. In 1987, people forget this, Trump began at least an exploratory campaign about running for president.
He did, that's right.
George H.W. Bush was then Reagan's vice president, yep, and the presumptive and future nominee. But Trump actually went to New Hampshire to... I think it's a restaurant named called Yokins, and it's sort of a rite of passage for Republican candidates to open their campaigns. Mm-hmm. And Trump did that, and he took out about the same time in early September 1987 a full page ad in the Washington
right.
Post,
remember that.
New York Times, and the Boston Globe, and it was full of these kind of ridiculous foreign policy prescriptions. That we've got to get rid of NATO, that we should abandon Japan as an ally.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, and there was no rhyme or reason. Those were not historic Republican or Democratic ideas at all. It made no sense, but they were talking points for the KGB. And at the same time, Yuri was indoctrinating another American spy, and they were feeding him those kind of talking points as well. And suddenly you see them coming out of the mouth of Donald Trump in the pages of the New York Times magazine, New York Times and the Washington Post. And everyone just sort of scratched their head and no one paid attention to it. But when Yuri went back to Moscow, to KGB headquarters, he got an internal memo from the KGB celebrating, we have a new asset we've recruited, and here is his first active measure that's sort of a propaganda act.
Right.
And sure enough, it was that full page ad by Donald Trump.
Frigging amazing. I mean, and the thing about what you're describing, Craig, is that it was all right there. It was there in the run up to the presidential primary. It was there when Donald Trump was putting out feelers for, and look, I know how we do due diligence inside the GOP for candidates. The fact that no one bothered to connect that dot going back that far, to me, is just astounding that he was able, the Russians, seriously? I mean, you can line up that newspaper ad and the talking points from the KGB and go, do we not see a correlation here? What was it about the way Trump did what he did that made him so effective as an asset? I mean, it just, because when you stop and think about it, it could, in their wildest dreams, the KGB would never have thought that a guy that they plucked out of, you know, a wedding to an East European model in 1977 and say, oh, yeah, I think we could probably get something out of this guy, would actually wind up being president of the United States.
Right. Absolutely. When they went after him, I they didn't have this grand 40-year plan that we're going to
No, you don't have a grand 40-year plan with Donald Trump. It's like 40 minutes.
Right. But they had protocols that advanced him to the next stage within the KGB. And the next stage became, well, we have to invite him to Moscow. And when you're invited to Moscow in 1987, that means you're being invited by the KGB. And it was General Ivan Gromykov of the KGB who started it off and who had the ambassador write a letter inviting him. The entire trip was, the planes and hotels were all booked by the KGB. And you can bet there were cameras in his...
I was going to say, and bugged by the KGB.
Exactly.
So how does this all fit into what we've experienced over the last 4 years? How has this asset of the KGB performing, I'm going to say at this point, wittingly, and I don't need to get into his head. I've been in it enough to figure out that a 70-something year old grown man at this point in his life should know whether or not he's an asset for a foreign government.
Right.
So I'm just going to assume for the sake of this conversation, he's clued in to some degree. I mean, and because I take, for example, the action that he took when he told everyone in the White House, you know, the National Security Advisor, Secretary of State, and others to leave the room so he could be alone with the Russian foreign minister, the Russian ambassador, to have a conversation about what?
Right.
So what should we learn? What did you discover about the last 4 years that sort of shores up what this book is about in terms of the American compromise?
Right. Well, I mean, in terms of his knowledge of it, I think you're right. It's very, very difficult to prove, but whether or not he is known.
Sure.
And one measure of it is he used Trump real estate to launder a lot of Russian money. And I date that back to at least 1984 when a guy went to his office with $5 million in cash. And by the way, adjusting for inflation, that's $15 million now. And he said, I'll take five condos without even looking at them, right? And this is a Russian emigre with ties to the KGB. Well, Trump doesn't say, gee, where'd you get your money? He takes the money. This is Donald Trump, right?
Of course he takes the money.
You know, you don't. If you're a mobster, you don't say, "Gee, did you get that money from Harold?"
Right.
You want not to know. And there's a legal concept called deliberate ignorance, right, or willful blindness. Trump did these kind of transactions, that is money laundering, which is all cash, anonymous shell company. Those are the two predicates. He did that kind of transaction at least 1,300 times. So I would argue that's a pattern. It's not like, oops, I laundered money three or four times, 1,300
right.
times. That's a real pattern. And you see him again and again since then. He's done so much for Russia, especially since becoming president. It's amazing. He's done spectacular damage to NATO. Putin wanted to discredit American democracy. No one's done more to do that than Donald Trump.
I wanted to get into that part of it, because that to me is something that will have residual effect for, I think, some time to come. In fact, the Biden administration is already dealing with some of the complications and intricacies of U.S. policy relative to North Korea, certainly relative to Russia, relative also to decisions made that impacted our alliance. How has Trump, was it one of these deals where Yuri was like, you know, telling you the KGB or Putin wants X and Donald Trump gave us X, or they right. wanted X and Donald Trump gave us half of X? I mean, what should we be looking for, or what do you think we're going to be dealing with in terms of the impact of this unholy alliance between Putin and Trump, and Trump as president? I don't give a rat's ass about the time when he was in business, but the man who was president of the United States, and there are consequences related to that.
Oh, absolutely.
How does the book walk us through that?
Right. Let me give you one sample, and it's perfect. Part of the genius is everything I say is perfectly legal. These mm-hmm. are things that happen. And in October of 2016, a month before the presidential election, Donald Trump Jr. Gave a talk in Paris at a French think tank. And that's legal. He was paid $50,000 to $100,000 or something. That's perfectly legal. What was left out so far is that the think tank was essentially a Russian front.
Oh,
and it was run by a Franco-Syrian couple, the woman whose name was Wanda Cassis, was considered the top model in Syria. whatever okay. that means. And we'll she was also a good friend of Bashar al-Assad.
Right.
And in Russia, a friend of Sergei Lavrov.
Oh, geez.
So she gives Donald Trump Jr. the talking points, what Russia wants in the Middle East from Donald Trump. And he tells his father, presumably, and his father acts accordingly. So sure enough, the next year, Donald Trump withdraws American troops from Syria. He abandons our Kurdish allies and he leaves the area to the Russians. And there's been barely a peep about this, but this is the kind of thing that's been going on again and again with Donald Trump.
Why haven't we been better as either as reporters who cover national security, foreign policy, and certainly cover, I still refer to them as the Soviet, because Putin is KGB, he's old KGB, he's total Soviet, but follow the Russian-Soviet activities. Why haven't we been exposed or learned more about these intricacies? Is it that people just kind of looked at Donald Trump and was like, he's all, TV guy, whatever, he's as harmless and non-threatening? What was it? Because I would think that's kind of like almost a perfect cover for a stooge. Yeah. For the KGB is someone that no one will take seriously. That's when they can do the most damage, I would think.
Right. Well, I think that's certainly an important element of it. But I also think both the FBI counterintelligence and the CIA sort of dropped the ball. And part of that was in the FBI at the time, we had the crack cocaine epidemic after the fall of the Soviet Union. And suddenly, actually, William Barr was attorney general under George H.W. Bush, right. You may recall. And he approved the transfer, and it was the biggest transfer of FBI manpower in history. 300 agents who'd been investigating the Russian mafia, and they went on to the crack cocaine epidemic instead. It was also the end of the Cold War. We'd won. A lot of agents I talked to said we didn't really know what to do. We didn't know, were they our friends now? What was the deal?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And Yuri says, America may have won the Cold War, but so did the KGB.
Well, yeah, no, they clearly did. No, there's no doubt about that. I mean, we at least won it on paper, but it's the after effects of it that I think, this idea, this tendency in America to look at these things somewhat statically. It's like how we deal with the Chinese. And, I tell people, the Chinese are executing on a plan that was laid out 500 years ago. So, it's a long game, and it's evolutionary. And the same is true with the Russians. They may have, we won the Cold War, but they're still engaged in it. They're still playing
absolutely
in the game.
And there are many different factions. I mean, Mikhail Gorbachev really was the genial guy he seemed to be, but the KGB hated him. And they tried to overthrow him. I mean, there was a coup in August of 1991.
Right.
And they were at his throats. They had their own plans. They had a very, very clever plan where they took like $50 billion in Soviet money and invested them in commodity firms that were run by the KGB in various industries. This is how it evolved into a mafia state, really. So whether it was natural gas or aluminum, you had these mobsters who were in charge of those industries. They were laundering money through Trump real estate. And they also came to bail out Trump around 2002 through another real estate company called Bayrock. Trump had gone belly up six bankruptcies in Atlantic City. And Bayrock, which is run by former Soviet emigres, which has ties to the KGB, comes in with hundreds of millions of dollars again and again to franchise Trump's name and put him back on his feet financially.
Oh my God. Okay. I gotta take a break because I'm gonna need to go get a nerve pill. Oh, ladies, folks, we're talking with Craig Unger, who's written one hell of a book. You got to pick it up. You got to get a copy of it. American Compromise, How the KGB Cultivated Donald Trump. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have more with Mr. Unger right after this.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Michael Steele podcast. As you know, we're talking with Craig Unger, who's written an incredible book. And again, I just cannot emphasize enough, we need to catch up, people, all right? We need to catch up to where Craig is taking us on this universe of entanglements with the Russians that Donald Trump has had. The book is The American Compromise, How the KGB Cultivated Donald Trump, and Related Tales of Sex, Greed, Power, and Treachery. So let's just get into the sex and greed part, because you put it in the title. So now I'm interested. What's this? You know, when we had Christopher Steele, who for some reason I always got confused with, and I keep telling people, you know, I love MI6, and I am very much an Anglophile, but I'm not a spy. I'm not Christopher Steele. But he put out in his dossier and a lot of the storylines that were evolving at the time of the Mueller investigation about some of the proclivities of our then private citizen, Donald Trump. What were those narratives? How much truth is all this stuff? And how was that used by forces inside the KGB to create compromise, to create uncomfortable scenarios for their targets and exploit later on?
Well, one answer to that you can look at with the Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell operation. And most people have characterized it as sex trafficking, which of course is true. But I look at it more as a compromise factory, really. Compromise means compromising material. And if you look at all the sexual activities, Jeffrey Epstein had an awful lot of them videotaped. So essentially he is collecting the dirty little secrets of the richest, most powerful people on the planet. When you start to look at his intelligence connections, I go back to Robert Maxwell, who was Ghislaine Maxwell's father.
Right.
And he was tied in both to MI6 and to the KGB, very, very tightly to the KGB, as well as to Mossad. And he was doing favors, trading back and forth with the Israelis, with the Soviets, whoever had the best deal for him. He helped, some of his money went to Jeffrey Epstein early on. And a lot of people have wondered, where did Epstein really make all his money? Because it's not clear he did it at all as a financier. I mean, the New York Times reported recently that Epstein had $158 million from Leon Black. Well, right. The multi-billionaire. Well, why was that? And they say, well, for tax advice. And I don't know what you pay your accountant, Michael.
I don't know.
It's less than $158 million, I bet.
So where are those tapes? Where are those? We know why they took the brother out. We figured that. I mean, that was the most obvious thing possible at that time.
Well, I end up trying to trace the compromise all over, and it's a very tangled web. But one of the funniest parts of it, I think, is I tracked down a guy. I found a guy named John Mark Dugan, who was a deputy sheriff in Palm Beach County, which, of course, was investigating Jeffrey Epstein. And when they investigated him, they seized, I believe, 478 DVDs that apparently had sex tapes on them. John Mark Dugan took it on the lam. If you've ever read books by Elmore Leonard or Carl Hiaasen,
yeah,
he's right out of that. He's like a sort of a lower on the police force. Everyone, he had a horrible reputation. And he's, though he was a cop himself, he takes it on the land to Canada and gets the first flight he can from Toronto to Moscow.
Of course.
And I tracked him down in Moscow, and I found a photo he put on his Facebook page of himself with a man who's not that well known to Americans, but his name is Pavel Borodin. And he was Vladimir Putin's mentor.
Wow.
And he was in charge of all property owned by the Russian Federation. That's roughly $1 trillion worth of property. And there he is meeting with this sort of nobody from Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office. And when I tracked down, Dugan said he had all these videos and they were in very safe hiding. He showed me one of them, which was very grainy, and I really couldn't identify
the person,
people in
right.
it. Right. When I talked to Yuri Spitz about it, he said there's only one transaction that could possibly be going on here, and that is that Dugan is trying to sell his kompromat to the Russians.
Interesting. So if that happens, what does that mean? I mean, so that does that mean the Russians then have the leverage over maybe some U.S. officials, et cetera, et cetera, or what?
Quite possibly. There's, I don't know obviously who is on all these sex videos. You can go to the list of people on Jeffrey Epstein's famous black book. It doesn't mean they were necessarily involved in these activities, but it's right. a list of the most famous people you can possibly name. And another part of it, by the way, is the lawyers would all have access to this as well.
Right.
And there you get into the big white shoe Washington law firms, the firms like Kirkland and Ellis, Jones and Day, and so
right.
forth. And many of whom, and that includes their partners, included such names as William Barr,
yep.
Brian Benkowski became head of the criminal division. So you have all sorts of people who may well have compromising material in their hands.
Interesting. It is that so James Bond. I mean, it just really kind of comes out of that. When the book came out and people were talking about it, that was really kind of my sense of it. Even though we were dealing with sort of real time events, especially related to Trump as president. You do have this sense, going back to what we were talking about before, how the Russians are still kind of playing the old game. America's kind of moved on and we're like, hey, we won the war and now we kind of go off and, we're going to have some popcorn and some Cheerios and just enjoy ourselves. Meanwhile, our one of our primary adversaries is like, nah, this ain't over. And so how do you see that playing out in the Biden era? I mean,
right.
Biden was very clear during the campaign about the Russians, as was Mitt Romney when he was running for president.
Absolutely.
And who called it out, right?
Yeah, Romney, you're absolutely right.
So how does that play itself out today? Putin clearly is, I think he's feeling the effects. I mean, I don't know if there's any truth to the rumors that his health is compromised. And therefore a lot of that virility that he likes to flaunt is not there politically as it once was. So they're already starting to look around for the next iteration.
Right.
What does that mean for us? How do these storylines, particularly as it relates to Trump, who's not going to disappear, who's probably still is expecting Russia to let him build Trump Moscow. If I know Trump, that's what he's thinking. So what do you think there? I mean, how do you?
Well, there are a lot of forces in play, and you're absolutely right. One obviously is that Trump is no longer the weapon he was for Putin. So that means Putin is weaker in
right.
that regard. Two, there is a lot of talk about Putin's health, and I, like you, don't have the final answers. Three is Navalny, the rise of Navalny, and Navalny is in jail now, of course. It remains to be seen whether he can become almost a Nelson Mandela-like figure And which, of course, Nelson Mandela was in jail for a long time.
He was in jail for a long time, yeah.
Yeah. And in addition, they're said to be, and this is still in the state of rumor, but real hardliners like Nikolai Patrushev, who is head of the FSB now, and he's leading a core of people who are even tougher than Putin. These are the people who actually poisoned Litvinenko.
Right.
And did the in Skripal and now went out and poisoned Navalny as well, and that they are maybe trying to push Putin aside and have even tougher people involved. So those all, you know, you have all these factors who are that are swirling about right now.
The Russians, I don't see that element that you've just described inside the KGB apparatus allowing someone like Navalny to come up and become that Mandela, you know, prisoner right. to president I'll kind of you. Narrative. Yeah. I just don't see that. I mean, I hate to say it this way, but I think we all know how hard they play the game. He could be dead long before that ever happens in their worldview. I mean, that's right. how they would stop that, which is why they've tried to assassinate him up to this point. But in the off chance of something catching fire with the Russian people that would push back on this sort of oligarchic state that has formed itself, you know, that is fueled and funded by the Russian mob, who we know have elements here, strong elements here in the United States as well. How do you see that being affected by or playing out in the Biden era, as Biden is sort of looking at what our relationship with Russia is going to be? You think it's still be just purely that sort of diplomatic to diplomatic thing, or are there some reason to think that the U.S. may now try to unhinge some of those connections and allow for someone like Navalny to sort of rise.
Right. Well, it's very fluid. The chief weapon, and I think obviously Biden will be much tougher about it than Trump was, is sanctions. And that really, when they're applied strongly and in conjunction with our European allies, which, you know, and Trump was sort of throwing away the whole alliance, but that can cause real problems for the oligarchs, and that's the source of, that's what right. keeps Putin in power. If he loses them, everything starts to fall apart. And that's why the sanctions regime was applied originally, and I think it was a pretty smart strategy until Trump started to weaken it.
How does this impeachment trial play out? Because if it plays out the way we think it will, that Trump is acquitted, right, and there's no conviction, I don't know how much the Russians can take away from that. We know what Donald Trump will take away from it. But you made the point earlier that Trump is obviously of less value and use to the Russians because he's no longer president. Biden has actually said he's not even giving him the presidential briefings because he doesn't trust him with that information, which is probably the smartest thing you could do.
Absolutely. Trump didn't read them when he was president. And
he just passed them on. He just passed them on to Putin. He didn't need to read them. They just like, no, I'm in the collection center here. Just make sure that gets over in the overnight pouch. What do you think happens there in terms of how the that scenario, is it so far removed from what you've described in your book and all of that, or are there some tangential elements there that could still play out for Trump and Putin and during this, you know, post-Trump era in the Biden time?
Well, I think it's very much a new chapter, and I don't know exactly how it's going to unfold. I'd love to see Navalny's, you know, catch fire in a way, but I don't, you know, it's such a regulated society. There's, you know, no freedom of the press whatsoever. And we'll see. I mean, but at the same time, the demonstrations were overpowering and across the entire country, and they were the biggest demonstrations in Russia in perhaps ever. I don't know all the answers. I sort of.
No, I know you know, but you're well sourced. We know that you're well sourced. So before I let you get out of here, Craig, what's the takeaway that you want readers to get from this book? What is it about American Compromise that we should know and maybe possibly be concerned about?
Right. Well, one thing I think that's absolutely important is we really need a counterintelligence investigation to figure out exactly what happened. And we need that so it won't happen again. And it's just crucial to me. I've gone as far as I can, as one reporter can with sources. But this is a job. If we don't get to the bottom of it and push it aside, when a 737 Boeing 737 MAX crashes, you just don't say, oh, well, they're dead. We're going to forget about it.
Right.
You investigate so it doesn't happen again. And we have to do that in this case.
The book is American Compromise, How the KGB Cultivated Donald Trump and Related Tales of Sex, Greed, Power, and Treachery. The author is the amazing Craig Unger. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. I'm just sitting here with the popcorn and I got the drink going, man. This has been a fascinating, fascinating conversation. Folks, I really, really got to pick this one up. It's a good read, and I think you will be enlightened a lot by not only how the book is sourced, but how Craig has put together this narrative that really opens the eyes. And I agree, there needs to be an investigation. I mean, if nothing else, folks, just off of this podcast, people should be like, somebody needs to look into that. Craig, thank you so much, man, for coming on. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Michael. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, that does it for this time together, folks. You know, we love you when you do the download thing. Don't forget to check us out on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, wherever you get your podcasts on. And until the next time, a couple of things. One, pick up American Compromise, right? Get the book, read it. Two, be safe, be well, wear the mask. Until next time, take care.
Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.